This is an interview with Carolyn Morgan, who served during the Persian Gulf War. This interview is being conducted at the Department of Veteran Affairs at the following address, 30 West Mifflin Street, Madison, Wisconsin, on the following date, November 2nd, 2011. The interviewer is Rachel Winkler. So, Carolyn, tell me a little bit about yourself.
I actually am from Madison. My dad was in the Air Force, so I was born in Japan when he was on active duty, and we moved to Madison in the late 60s, and we were stationed at Truex Field. We actually lived at Truex Field, where the MATC parking lot is now. We lived in a trailer there, and so I went to high school in Madison, elementary, grade school, all of that here in Madison. And then I decided I wanted to join the military. So I wanted to follow in my dad's footsteps. As a kid, I always said I wanted to go back to Japan. And I wanted my firstborn to be there. And it happened. I joined the military. I was stationed at Misawa, Japan. And my daughter was born. First baby of the new year. In 1998. Yeah.
So where in Japan were you born then?
I was born in Tokyo, Johnson Air Base.
What year was that?
1961.
Mm-hmm. So, do you remember growing up in Japan at all?
No, I was 1 year old when we left and came back to the States.
All right. So, when you were back here, what was it like being here with an Army or with an Air Force dad? And
I just remember all the trailers out at Truex Field, the big buildings. You know, the Sage Building is still out there. I remember going to the doctor on Wright Street. MATC wasn't there. East Town wasn't built. West Town wasn't built. It was mainly farmland all around here. Only place you could go shopping was downtown here at Gimbel's and Manchester's and Rent-A-Bombs. And so we used to come downtown with my mom and dad shopping all the time. Madison's changed a lot since we moved here in the late 60s.
So your dad was in the Air Force. You followed in one Air Force yourself, too?
Yes, I did.
Did you enlist right out of high school? Or
1 year after high school, I enlisted into the Air National Guard in 1980. One of the first black females to enlist with the 115th Fighter Wing. Then in 85, I went active duty.
Were your parents surprised at all by your decision?
My dad didn't want me to go, and neither did my mom, because I didn't have a college degree. Of course, when my dad was in the military, racial tensions were really high. So he did a lot of fighting for minorities when he was in the military. And he wanted all four of us girls to go to college, get our degree, and if we wanted to enlist as an officer. I didn't want to go to school.
12 years is plenty.
Yeah, plenty. Way plenty.
I hear you there. Mm-hmm. What about your mom?
My mom, she followed my dad until we got here to Madison. And then all of a sudden, she decided she wanted to work. And she also didn't want to move anymore because my sister above me, Adrian, started exhibiting anxiety and from all the moving, going to different schools and everything. So she wanted all of us to grow up somewhere without all the moving. So she wanted my dad to get out, and he did. Yeah.
What about you? Was she against you going into?
My mom has been so supportive in every single thing that any of us girls have done. Best mom in the world. She, you know, she never discouraged us from doing anything. She always encouraged us to do what we wanted to do. Learn from your mistakes. Yeah, but the only thing that I'll say is that, two things my mom, one is that when she would discipline us, she had this way of disciplining us that we would turn around and go, oh, thank you for disciplining me. We love you so much. You know, she had that way. And then the other was that she always said, be nice to anybody and everybody who is ever in your life, because you never know where they may end up in your life again. They could be that doctor over you on an emergency room table where you're dying. They look down and go, Ooh, I remember her. She was really mean to me when I was in high school, you know? It might let you die. So my mom said, always be nice to anybody and everybody.
Did you take that philosophy with you into the military?
I did, and I take it with me now.
Yes. That's good. Mm-hmm. How about your sisters? What do they think of you?
I think my sisters, they all three went to college, but they knew I was different. And they were worried about me, but they supported me.
Where are you in the order?
I'm the third. So there's two above me and one below me. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Did your extended family have any opinions about
nothing at all? No. and everybody was just very supportive of everything that all of us girls did.
That's good. Mm-hmm. So, when you decided to go in, what were you doing between high school and your decision to go in?
Not a whole lot. Not a whole lot of good things either. I was lost. I knew I wasn't a good student. And I knew I needed to do something because my mom and dad said that we needed either to work or we needed an education. And so I wanted to get out of Madison because I wasn't doing well here. I was working four jobs at once. My first boyfriend and I were getting back together, breaking up, getting back together, breaking up. So I wanted to move away from him, actually. And so I joined the active duty to get away from him. But I ended up marrying him.
Ooh. Congratulations.
Yeah, right. We ended up divorcing, too.
Oh.
Yeah.
Not quite as fun.
But I have two beautiful children.
That's good. Yes. That's important. Mm-hmm. So, were you excited when you enlisted, or how did you feel about it?
Well, when I first enlisted into the Air Guard, I thought I was going active duty. When I got down to basic training and everything else, talking to everybody, all the girls down there, you know, they were talking about how they were going to their next duty station and everything else, and I was told, you're going back home. And I was like, really? Because I guess I didn't understand the difference between the Guard and the active duty. I just didn't. So I was excited, but yet I was very scared. I went ahead and did the Guard thing because they wouldn't let you switch over to active duty. I came back, didn't do very well again because it wasn't full-time, and tried to go back to school, working many jobs again, and then in 85 decided to go active duty. So when I decided to go active duty, went down and saw the recruiter in 85, and I guess the numbers weren't that good then, because he ended up putting me back in as a raw recruit, as if I had never been in before. So I ended up going to basic training again at Lackland Air Force Base. So I actually wear the oak leaf cluster on my graduation ribbon for basic training for Air Force, because I went through twice.
Where'd you go the first time?
Lackland Air Force Base, Texas.
All right.
Same place.
So, where were you put the second time?
The second time, I went through basic training just as if I was a raw recruit again. Mm-hmm. And then I was stationed in Misawa. I went in as a cook, and I got my first duty station, which was Japan, and it was in Misawa.
You're happy about that?
Oh, I was so happy about that. I really was.
Well, that's good. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. Was boot camp better the first or second time?
Oh, girl, please. Well, the first time, you know, I went through and I was recruited into drum bugle, so I was pulled out of my flight, and I was put in a co-ed flight with drum and bugle. So we got to wear our blues the first time. We didn't do the a lot of the things that they did, the details and stuff like that. We went to football games and played. We did parades. So basic training the first time for me, okay, it was easy. Because I was in drum and bugle, playing the contrabass. And I sat first chair. So I was the first female that they had that played contrabass. Because it's like a tuba. Mm-hmm. And so the guys hated me. Because, one, I was a girl. And, two, I was black. Oh. And I beat all of them out in playing the tuba, or the contrabass. So they did not like me.
Did you Did you get any repercussions for that, because, for being female or black?
I think the only thing was that, you know, the ribbing, it wasn't that bad. I would say more over because it was drum and bugle and it was different for us, it was more fun. It was more fun and it was laid back. Yeah.
For those who don't know, can you explain that, drum and bugle, a little bit?
Drum and bugle would be the band, the Air Force band, but they called it drum and bugle. Instead of playing band instruments, we played drum corps instruments. So instead of the tuba, we had the contrabass. Instead of the flutes and stuff, we had the sousaphones, and it was all drum corps equipment instead. Yeah. So it was, we played for graduations, at all the graduations. We played anything that they needed music for, we were there.
So that was the second time through.
That was him. And the reason was is because when I got there, I really thought I'd only be there for 2 weeks. You know, because my recruiter told me, 2 weeks to get your issue of new uniforms, your name in the computer, and then you'll be gone. I don't think so. I went in as a raw recruit. Yes, they gave me a chance to take the test early to see if I could graduate. It was me and another female that was in the Army. We marched over, we took our exam, we both missed it by like 1 point. Yeah, so we ended up doing our 6 weeks of basic training all over again. And then when we got back, they made us dorm chief and assistant dorm chief. And if you could imagine, the two of us were in our mid to late 20s, and everybody else was like 18, 19. So there was a lot of fighting, a lot of stupid stuff going on, girls sneaking out of the barracks to meet boys and stuff like that. Somebody got caught, and so who do they call? The dorm chief and the assistant dorm chief, and they want to know why our flight is falling apart, you know. Well, it wasn't us, it was the other girls, you know. You can't control what the other girls are doing. And so that's what we told our first sergeant. We can't control what they're doing, but yet they try to tell you that you should be controlling what they're doing because they should be listening to us.
Okay. So... when stuff like that would happen, did you do any disciplinary stuff, or was it the higher-ups that did that?
It was the higher-ups that did it, you know, but at the same time, whoever is on top in basic training, they always want to pull you down, because they don't want you to think that you're any better than they are, and so they're always trying to get you in trouble for something, because you're the one in charge, right? I think it's no different than when the teacher leaves the classroom and leaves somebody in charge, and everybody wants to get that person in trouble, right?
Yeah. Do you have any, like, stories, memories of that?
Basic training? Not really. We went to church a lot, you know. That was a refuge for everybody, was to go to church. I mean, we met boys and stuff out at the chaparral and did dancing and stuff like that. But, yeah, we didn't really have any stories that we got into.
No. No shenanigans or anything?
No, we really, you know, and that's just amazing that nothing like that happened when I was there. Yeah.
Did you make any friends?
I made one friend. I don't keep in contact with her anymore, but I remember her name, Lynn LaPlante. And she did come to Wisconsin and visit. And we took a Blackhawk to Milwaukee and had coffee one day. When I was in the Guard, that was fun. I'm back in the early 80s. Every weekend we were going somewhere on orders. California, Hawaii, Florida. That was back when they would give us dummy orders because planes were flying somewhere. And if they had seats, they would let you fly along. And so, yeah, we went to Hawaii. We played on the softball team, did a lot of traveling. So the military has changed a lot. The Guard has changed a lot. There's not as much money as there used to be that you can do all that traveling and nonsense like we used to do. The rules are a lot more strict. Yeah.
Are you still in?
No, I'm not. I got out in 97.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. So, your first duty station was in Japan, you said?
Yes, it was.
So, tell me about Japan.
Oh, I loved it because it was all the lights. Everything there is so bright. Even their dump trucks have lights on them at night, and they're painted purple and pink and red and green. You drive on the other side of the road. The food is so good. We live 10 minutes away from the ocean, 20 minutes away from the mountains. I learned how to ski at Ape Mountain. My experience there was, I was married at the time, so a bunch of us went skiing to Ape Mountain. I had never skied before, and so I started out on the bunny hill. In Japan, people start their children out very young. In everything, it seems like. Because the kids were like 1 year old and they're skiing, you know. So here I am, I'm on the bunny hill, and finally I felt a little better that I could go down. So I got on a bigger hill, and I tucked my poles underneath, and I screamed all the way down the hill. So if you can imagine, people jumping out of my way, kids jumping out of my way, and I'm screaming all the way down the hill. That's how I learned how to ski in Japan, at Ape Mountain. Yeah. So we would go to the pachinko parlors, the gambling. At night, they had, during the summer and spring and fall, they had the carts of people selling food where you could go walking around downtown. 4th of July was wonderful there. The biggest and best fireworks you could ever see coming out of the water on the ships. It was just gorgeous, just gorgeous. We used to go to the ocean, and the Japanese used these glass balls as in their fishing nets as buoys. And so we used to go to the ocean, and we would find them washed up on the shore. Well, one time my husband and I went to the wrong beach. So we were gathering them up, and some Japanese guy came out running after us with a stick. No, you can't take those. So we ran. Got in the car and took off. I guess it's because the ones that were there were purple, and those were for royalty. So I guess we were in the wrong place. We were getting ones we weren't supposed to get. I had friends that visited while I was over there from college, and one of them is almost 7 feet tall. And so we went up into the mountains to where people didn't usually see Americans. And he was taller than the cars. He was as tall as some of the houses. And the children were just laughing at him and pointing. They couldn't believe it. But there was one night my husband and I were driving in the mountains. And, you know, you stop because people are always walking across the street and whatnot. And this guy was standing on the side of the road with a bunch of kids and his dog. So I stopped. And he motioned me to go, and I said, no, no, you go. And we sat there for a few minutes, and finally I went, and all of a sudden I feel boom. It was like, oh, no. I ran over his dog because the dog went. So I'm getting out of the car, and I didn't know how to speak much Japanese at all except for, you know, I'm sorry. And you know, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. So I didn't know what to. He looked like he was going to cry. The kids looked like they were going to cry. So I gave him 2,000 yen or something like that. So then when I got back to base and we were telling people about it, they were laughing at us because they were saying, yeah, the guy probably took the dog back, cooked it up for the whole family, and they bought sake with the money that he gave them. You know, so, I mean, at least after that I felt a little better. But, I mean, I just felt awful running over some guy's dog up in the mountains that they probably never see Americans ever. Oh, yeah. So it was very interesting, but when I was stationed over there, the newest thing was dependent husbands. And that's something that I had. My husband had never been in the military, didn't know anything about the military. And we ended up hanging around with five other families who had dependent husbands as well. So there's all these dependent husbands with wives that are in the military. Those guys got in a lot of trouble. A lot of trouble. Let's just say they got in a lot of trouble. Yeah. So, to where my husband actually ended up being barred from Japan for 5 years. There was a, dependent husbands, I don't think they knew what they were supposed to be doing there. You know, they weren't cleaning house, they weren't cooking, they weren't taking care of children, they were out partying and getting in trouble. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, big time. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. I won't make you go into detail about that.
Thank you.
So, you said you were a cook when you were in?
Yes, I was.
So, what does that entail? What do you do?
Well, actually, I worked in the dining facility. You know, in the Air Force, we call them dining facilities, not chow halls, not mess halls. And I'll bring you in one of the articles that they wrote on me there, and also one of my daughter when she was born. I'll tell you about that. But I worked in the dining facility as a cook, you know, making eggs in the morning for breakfast. And my best dish that I ever made was, we always had a trouble getting rid of the liver. You know, nobody wanted to eat the liver. So one day I decided I wanted to make it like my mom made it, because I loved my mom's liver. So I cooked it up with the liver and onions and the bacon and everything else, and that was the first time ever that they had sold out a liver. Yeah, so they ended up writing an article on it. Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Was it like an Air Force article, like a newspaper article?
It was a Air Force newspaper article, yeah, because over there we had our own TV, the Forced Entertainment Network. That's what we call it. FEN, the Forced Entertainment Network. That's what we call it. And then they have their own newspaper, you know, their own PAO people and everything else. Like I said, my daughter was the first born there, January 1st, 1988. I was pregnant, and I was in the dining facility, working in the back office, doing paperwork and whatnot. I went into labor, I think, right around Christmas, yes.
Like 5 days?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. And so I remember sitting in the office, and I knew something was going on, and I told my boss, I've got to go because I think I'm in labor. He goes, no, you need to sit there and write as much as you can, get as much work done as you can before you leave us, and we have to get somebody else to do this work. So I was there for a while, half a day, and one of the guys came back who had a gazillion kids, his wife. And he said, she's got to go to the doctor right now. So he took me over to the doctor. I remember walking in the front door of the hospital. And I told him I was in labor. And the nurse said, no, you're not. And I said, yes, I am. She goes, you're still smiling. So what they did was, I believe they gave me sleeping pills and I went home. So I was home for 4 or 5 days. Because she didn't come until the 1st of January at 2:08 in the afternoon. And that would be 12:08 here in the United States. So she was born at 12:08 in the morning, United States time. But she was still the first baby in the new year in Japan. And I remember cleaning the house right before I had to go. And a friend of mine, we got in the car, and we lived off base, and she was going to drive right through the gate because I was in labor finally, for real, you know. And we had to stop at the gate, and the gate guard had to let us in and everything else. And went to the hospital, but I didn't have her until the next day. And it was a long labor. And I remember all the nurses, the attendants, and the doctor were all male. All male. And I can remember in labor, hard labor, and they're all watching the Rose Bowl game or something like that on TV as I'm in labor, and the nurse was not. He was sitting reading the newspaper. And I remember getting really mad, and I said, I've decided I'm not having this baby. I'm getting up off this gurney, and I'm going home. And I remember the nurse pulling his paper down and saying, oh, Carolyn, no, you're not. And he just put the paper back out. But all the other, you know, the doctor, my husband, the other nurses are all watching the football game on TV as I'm in labor. But it was all males. So it was tough. Yeah.
Did they eventually give you their undivided attention?
Finally, when I was actually having the baby. Yeah. Even the other nurse put his paper down so he could help me out. Yeah, so that's what I remember of having my daughter the first baby of the new year. They did a nice article in the paper, and we were on TV, and, you know, of course they asked me, so what is she going to be when she grows up? And, you know me, I'm like, she's going to be a model. Oh my gosh, did I catch hell for that from everybody? I would have said she was going to be president. I would say she was going to be this, but you had to say she was going to be a model. So, oh yeah. People are very vocal in the military.
That's okay.
Yeah.
So, how long were you in Japan then?
I was in Japan for 3 years. And then I came back to the States, and I was stationed at Shaw Air Force Base in Sumter, South Carolina. And that was in 89. Now, if you can imagine, still in 89, at Shaw Air Force Base, there was a lot of racial tensions going on. So there were places that we couldn't go. Number one, I guess I should tell you, I was married to a white man. Okay, so my husband was white. And so interracial couples had the choice at that time if they wanted to go to Sumter, South Carolina or not. We chose to go. But when we were there, we were told of places we just could not go. Back roads we couldn't go. Places in town, you know, outside of Sumter, we couldn't go. So the racial tensions were still pretty heightened back then. Yeah.
And that was all just for your own safety?
That was all for our own safety. Oh, yeah. We went through briefings when we got there as a interracial couple, them telling us the things that we could and couldn't do.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. That was in 89.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That's crazy.
Yes. Oh,
yes. Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So how long were you in South Carolina then?
I was in South Carolina until 92. The Gulf War, no, 92. The Gulf War kicked off in 90. And my son was born February 2nd, 1990. And I remember putting him to bed after nursing him. And my son, or my husband and my daughter were downstairs watching the invasion of Kuwait. And the president on TV saying that we were going to war. And I came down, I got the phone call, I needed to report to the flight line, and that we needed to bring our A-bags and without rocks. Because during exercises to make weight on your bag, we weren't at war. So why would we have this bag ready with the 8 white t-shirts, the underwear, the socks, and all the other uniforms and everything? So we'd fill them with rocks so that they would make weight. And they said that you had to have them, they had to be packed, ready to go for war. And we went down to the flight line. They said we were getting ready to be shipped overseas. They got us all ready. I remember I called my husband and told him I'm not coming back home because we weren't coming back home. We were supposed to leave that night. We didn't leave that night. My husband sent the kids to the babysitter. I went home, spent my last night with him, went back, and 8.5 months later, I saw my son and my daughter.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. They told us we'd be gone first at 30 days. 30 days turned into 8.5 months.
Oh, my goodness.
So I remember getting off the plane. Well, we flew into the Azores. That was cool. Spain. And then we flew into the United Arab Emirates. We got off the plane. It was 2 o'clock in the morning, hot. I mean, you could, stifling hot, you couldn't even breathe. And we were told to stay on the flight line because if we got into the sand, we might be stung by scorpions or we could get shot, one or the other. We ended up staying on a old Russian base that was deserted, and we were staying in these hooches, they call them, like these little trailers. They left a lot of stuff behind, I'm telling you. They left a lot of stuff behind. A lot of dogs. So there were wild dogs there. And there was nothing else. So we had to build the base from scratch. We got there August 10th of 1990. And there wasn't anything there except for those hooches. So we were sleeping wherever we could. I remember my first initial job was handing out soda pops and water to people. I know, soda pops, because they didn't have bottled water at the time. We were handing out soda pops, so we were drinking a lot of soda. And they were building the base tent city down the hill, and I was working night shift and at the command center. And so somebody's wife called or something, and my boss told me I needed to go down and deliver a message. Non-essential. I said I'd be more than happy to do that with an escort. I was told I was a service member just like he was in the military, and I needed to do my job just as he had. I said, but I'm not going to walk around at night somewhere I don't know where our security police are shooting dogs. Because if they were shooting the wild dogs, if they saw them. And so if I had been out there walking by myself and they might have mistaken me for a wild dog, they might have shot me. Well, he didn't like that. The next day I was moved down to the dining hall. No big deal. And up there. You know, he wasn't going to ruin my happiness. Or whatever I had there. So I ended up going back down and working in the chow hall. That's what they call it out there. It was at an R&R base in the United Arab Emirates in Abu Dhabi. So, I think I lost that. Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's quite all right.